Inside segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Election 2020, what a night, what a day, and it's not over yet as former Vice President Joe Biden holds a razor's edge lead in some key states. President Trump and others, the Electoral College votes continue to tell the tale. Biden is only 17 votes away from the winning 270 mark, leading Trump 253-214. Tonight, we're talking about where we are, where we were, and where we may be going. My guests are Dr. Clarence Lussain, political science professor at Howard University, and Sonia Ross, editor-in-chief of Black Women Unmuted, and you, our listeners, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I invite you to tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Lussain, Sonia, thank you both for joining the conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sonia, let's talk about, first of all, where we are right now. I started, of course, with Biden leading Trump 253-214 electoral college votes, but now we've got talk about lawsuits and other battleground states in play. What can you tell me?
Well, it depends on whose count you're believing here.
How about
the,
that?
The general consensus on the count is that former Vice President Biden is roughly 6 or 7 electoral votes away from hitting 270. Some outlets have called Michigan for Biden, and there are still several other battleground states outstanding, including Georgia, which should be firmly red, but is on the brink of possibly going blue if those votes out of the Atlanta metropolitan area send it there. There's a very small margin between President Trump and former Vice President Biden in Georgia, somewhere around 70, 75,000 votes. So it's way too close to call. We'll be here for a minute.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, we will definitely be here for a minute or two or 12. There's no question about that. Mm-hmm. And I think to that point, one of the things that is fascinating and for a great many of us, you know, nerve-wracking is the in-person vote versus the, you know, the mail-in vote. That is really one of the major determining factors often when we see that the supporters of President Trump, you know, Republicans, they prefer to do it in person. You had Democrats who were doing the mail-in.
Right. And, you know, there was a consensus all along that there would be this red wave or red mirage, whichever way you want to call it, on Election Day, because more Republican and Republican-leaning voters were tending to opt to vote in person on Election Day. And Democrats, because of the pandemic, more Democrats were opting to do mail-in voting or absentee voting and drop the ballots off or mail them in. So that was not a surprise that it might go that way. What shocked most people, particularly Democrats, was the extent to which President Trump was competitive in real time. You know, many people had a fervent desire for there to be just a complete drumming of President Trump, a complete repudiation by the electorate on Election Day. So I think lots of folks were shocked to see that the race was extremely close, this close.
Yeah, absolutely. Dr. Lussain, what does that say when, you know, as Sonia was saying, there was the expectation that you know, Vice President Biden was going to run the president out of town, so to speak, landslide or mudslide or however you want to put it. But that didn't happen.
Well, there are three words, margin of error. So similar to 2016, the polls were not that far off, particularly the national polls. Various states are difficult to poll. So those tend to be more wrong than ever. But when you look at margin of error, it's actually not that surprising, and particularly given the polarization in the country. But Georgia, the surprise is that it's actually close at all, as Sonia mentioned, because nobody would put that in the category 6 months ago. North Carolina has, Democrats have won, but they've also lost. And so there are states that were on the wish list that fed this idea of a drubbing of Donald Trump. But the reality is that the country is very divided. Although, again, if we didn't have this electoral college system, Donald Trump would be losing right now, or is losing right now, by 3 million votes. Biden has about 70 million. Donald Trump has about 67 million. And the outrageousness of the electoral system is that if by chance Biden actually loses and Trump becomes president, this could be the second presidential campaign or race in a row in which the person who does not get the popular vote becomes the president. And so that's really kind of laying out there again and again and again as a democratic distortion that at some point we really do need to address.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about election 2020. What a night, what a day. It is not over. Where do we go from here? Let's go to D. D, calling from Arlington, Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? D, can you hear me? D, can you hear me? We're going to fix that. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So let's, Dr. Lusain, can we do a little Electoral College 101? I want to sit in your class. Give me the cliff notes. What is going on with that? Where does it come from? It once again is rearing its, some would say, ugly head. It is confusing. Why not winner take all?
So different from, let's say, every other country on the planet, we have a system where it is not based on who gets the most popular votes, but by states. And this comes out of anxiety during the Constitutional Convention about giving too much power to the central federal government. So they created this system particularly to appease Southern slaveholders, where you would not win by popular vote, but that each state would have a designated specific number that we end up calling electoral votes. And it's easy to remember how many electoral votes exist in each state because it's basically the number of members that you have in Congress. So California, for example, has 53 representatives and two senators, so it has 55 electoral votes. Florida has 27 representatives. It has two senators, so it has 29. When you add all 50 states up, it comes to 535. And then the 23rd Amendment gave Washington, D.C. three electoral votes, so you have 538. Half of 538 is 269. So 1 over 269 is the majority, that 270. So it doesn't matter if you win a state by one vote or by a billion votes, you're only going to get the number of electoral votes that exist in that particular state. So this is, again, a system that in the past fairly worked out that the popular vote candidate was the one who won. There are three times in the 19th century where it kind of didn't happen. But now in the 20th century, it's happened twice and potentially could happen a third time. So, again, I'm on my soapbox about one of the things that should be at the top of our agenda for democratic reform is abolishment of the Electoral College.
Yeah, a lot of discussion about that. Let me see. 535, carry the two. Never mind. certainly a lot to think about. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about election 2020, where we are, where we were, and where we could possibly be going. D, are you back? D, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, thank you so much, D. I was about to hang up on you again. There you go. What's on your mind?
And I was like, uh-oh.
Go ahead.
Hi. I was just going to say that I am really scared. Not as much, well, I was scared we were going to, you know, not, Biden was not going to win, but I was also afraid because I had no idea. I really had no idea there were so many crazy racists out there. I'm sorry, but that's just what I feel like the Republican Party is. And the fact that there's so many of them and they're coming out of the woodwork, and we have so much work we have to do because they have been enabled by Trump. And I just think this is going to take more than 4 years. And unfortunately, if something happens with Biden, I don't know if Harris could take this and run with it. And we could lose again. And we'll be back to where we started.
Interesting thoughts. Thank you so much, Dee. Sonia, your thoughts about what Dee was sharing with us.
Dee has a very legitimate fear. And the thing is, we've been in this two steps forward, one step back mode for so long. It's almost a comfortable discomfort for us as African Americans in this country. I actually would hope that this nation is giving a chance to Biden Harris, and that maybe they could become comfortable with her leadership if she delivers in the role. If she doesn't deliver in the role, wouldn't she need to be turned out of office just as any other candidate who fails to deliver in the role would do? What we have right now is almost what we've been wishing for a long time in the category of be careful what you ask for because you might get it. There's long been a discussion that Americans take voting for granted. Americans don't go to the polls when it's time to select the leaders. These low turnout elections is what gets us in this trouble. And now here we are with a very energized electorate. Actually, the vote count for the Biden-Harris ticket right now has hit a record 70 million votes, 70 million and a little over, like 400 some odd thousand, which exceeds the record turnout that elected Barack Obama in 2008, and we're not done counting the votes. When an electorate is that energized, I suppose it can cut both ways, right? Maybe we'll see a reality where the people will speak in a more unified voice the next time, and it all gets down to how well Biden and Harris can steer this country in office.
Interesting. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about election 2020, where we are, where we were, and where we may be going. Gerald, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Gerald. What's on your mind?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Hey, you know, it's disappointing that we didn't hit the blue wave, but I'm optimistic. I think what this pandemic and this election should show us that we need to educate ourselves more on policies, procedures, how they do these laws, how they write us, and how they treat black folks. And I think I've done more education study, knowing my history, how people think, how things go, to have a better understanding of how all this goes, so I wouldn't be so upset with what's going on. But I just want people to just take the time to educate themselves, be more a part of what's going on, and just don't sit back and just watch it and be disappointed when stuff go on when you're not a part of it.
Come on, Gerald, hold on. Did you hear that first debate? But what do you mean policies? They were more adept at doing the dozens.
Yeah, but you know what? If you go back in the history, you'll see that they've been doing it all along. You know,
right.
Sometimes we get so people vote on emotions. And when you vote on emotions, you kind of miss the boat. And just like things that I've learned with, like, the Supreme Court, they make laws out here, but it's how the judges interpret the law. So if someone has a sense of thinking about how they're going to interpret the law, we could be under anybody's assumption of what the law is.
Yeah.
And so it's been amazing to understand what's going on.
Well, Gerald, thank you so much for sharing with us. And please, whatever you do, do not get off of your soapbox. I want you to stay right there and keep preaching what you are. You are absolutely right.
You,
thank you
God
so much.
And I want to say I appreciate you for doing what you do. I've been listening to you for years, and we need to stick with where truth is. You know, don't be mad if somebody have a different idea.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you know, we don't have to be disagreeable to disagree. Thank you so much, Gerald.
Well
I appreciate
said.
That. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Suzanne, calling from D.C. I want to hear from you. What's on your mind?
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead.
Yes, I'm calling because I heard a statistic, and it was very disenchanting that 19% of black men voted for Trump. And, you know, I remember you had when Kamala Harris was first chosen to be the vice president, you had a show, and I was listening to it, and a lot of brothers called in and said that they couldn't vote for her. And I remember comments like, oh, she's married to a white guy. And of course, her stance on law and order, but she apologized for some of the stuff she did. But I want to know, why did so many of our brothers vote for Trump?
Suzanne, I need you to hold on because I really want you to hear the answer as I go to a break. And always remember, it's not Kamala, it is Kamala, like in C-O-N.
Kamala, I'm sorry.
That's
okay,
all right.
I got
we're just trying to get it right. It is Kamala Harris. Suzanne, stay with us. Okay. Do not hang up. Carl from Silver Spring, we're going to talk to you next. So please do not hang up. This is going to be a really great conversation. Where are we? Where were we? And where might we be going when it comes to election 2020? Please stay with us. This conversation will continue on SiriusXM channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We're going to stay on SiriusXM channel 141. We'll be back in about 15 seconds or so.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about Election 2020, where we are, where we were, and where we may be going. My guests are Dr. Clarence Lussain, political science professor here at Howard University, and Sonia Ross, editor-in-chief of Black Women Unmuted. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Okay, so Suzanne was asking about the black male vote. Don't know about the statistic, but Dr. Lussain, can you take a stab at what she, about the question that she's raising?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So when we take a dive into the numbers, there are actually, to me, some disturbing figures. So Sonia mentioned that Biden has 70 million plus votes, which is amazing. But Donald Trump has 67 million votes, more than he got in the last time. And that's just kind of stunning, given all that the country's been through. Donald Trump actually gets more votes than he did last time. Now, when we break it down, and I think the reader is referring to the exit polls, what we see is that Donald Trump actually lost in terms of white votes. He actually got less. He got about 56%, where last time he got about 58%. But he actually increased his vote among black people and among Latinos. And when you break it down by gender, there's a gender gap. So about 18% of black men voted for Trump and about 8% of women. For black women, it actually was double because last election, Donald Trump only got about 4%. But this number of 18, 19% for black men really is kind of intriguing. Last time there was a lot of argument about Hillary Clinton and kind of opposition to her and her vote around the crime bill and all of that. And so you had a lot of black men in polls and in other ways kind of speaking out against her based on that and some gender issues. What happened this year was partially a very targeted campaign by the Trump campaign to go after black men, and particularly in swing states, in Florida, in Michigan, and Pennsylvania. And so it would be interesting to see that data, not just the national data, but what happened, because in 2016, those were outliers in terms of the black vote. And so you've got black men who were targeted and who were susceptible to some of the myths around Donald Trump, that he's a great businessman, that he's a tough guy, that he saved the economy, and they bought into this. And the Biden campaign did not have an apparent answer that could win some of these voters over. And then just really quickly, the Latino vote also did not get the kind of attention that the Biden campaign probably should have given it, and particularly in Florida and in Texas, where the Trump campaign really focused on these issues of anti-communism and the left, which they tagged onto Biden. And they made a concerted effort in the evangelical community, which is very strong in the Latino community.
I want to stick with this issue that Suzanne brought up, because I really think it's important, Sonia, if you can opine on it, if you have any, you know, any thoughts about it and the black male vote.
Well, remember that double-edged sword that I mentioned earlier?
Yes.
Here we have it, you know. First of all, we did have prominent black men who were entertainers stepped up in almost the 11th hour voicing support for Trump. We can't underestimate the influence of those figures. 50 Cent, Ice Cube, Lil Wayne, several rappers jumped in support
Kanye.
Of Donald Trump. Kanye, he started the wave, right? And so what are we seeing in the statistics, you know, that Trump was able to make some inroads with black men? Among the black men who he did get into his column, more than half of them identified as ideologically conservative. And one in three black men living in the Midwest voted for him. This is according to exit polls, okay? And Trump also made inroads with black women. Trump also picked up some gains with white women, where we talked about the notorious 53% of white women who supported him in 2016. Now we have 55% of white women supported him. Among the black men who supported Trump, a little over a quarter of them had a high school diploma or less. About 20% had a bachelor's degree, 20% with an advanced degree, you see. So we're talking a broad swath of black men, not just those who just happen to listen to rappers or some other thing.
So, well, let me jump in. And because the reason I found this so fascinating, and we're going to move on because I want to hear from Carl as well. Who knows, we may even discuss this a little bit more on this program at a later date. But once we, you know, some of the statistics come out. But, you know, one of the things, a friend of mine, somebody much smarter than I, who's got a whole bunch of degrees and all of that kind of stuff, did make a suggestion that it may be more simple, considerably more simple, that black men may identify with Trump as a tough guy or as a Teflon president where nothing may stick. You know, this was a woman, she talked about, you know, some of the things, and this is psychological. I'm not a counselor, I'm not a psychologist, but like I said, we should talk about this at another time. But, you know, she also talked about, you know, toxic masculinity, which the president exudes a great deal. And we can go back and forth about whether there are issues with men in general or black men specifically with that. You know, I I'm not going to talk about that, you know, as far as having an opinion about it, but I don't think that it is an invalid, you know, consideration that it's not just about if you're, you know, 50 Cent or is it 50? Either one. And, you know, or Lil Wayne or, you know, Half Dollar.
Or any of them.
Yeah,
right.
About whether or not, you know, Ice Cube, whether or not you're wealthy and it's about money. But there, again, there may be, you know, more psychological issues as to why this time they, you know, followed, you know, some of these high profile black men followed Donald Trump beyond the money issue, Dr. Lusain.
Right. And we do need to talk to these men and listen to them and hear what they have to say about why they chose Donald Trump as their candidate. You know, a lot of recriminations have boiled around this particular election, and there's high intolerance for either side, for Democratic or Republican leaning voters. So instead of treating these people who vote for Donald Trump like pariahs, there needs to be some serious engagement to understand the motivations there.
Yeah. Dr. Lusain, you wanted to make a final comment before I take another call.
So one of the elements that also was there was around criminal justice. And on the one hand, the Trump campaign really pumped up the First Step Act and kind of what they were doing around that, versus really focusing on Joe Biden and the crime bill and, you know, kind of going down that road. So, you know, that disproportionately also impacted black men. But absolutely, this idea of masculinity, which is what, you know, there's a number of analysis kind of that have been looking at that all year, because the support for Donald Trump among black men has been as high as like 20%, but even before the election in some polls. So this has been around for a while, at least, you know, at least for the last year or two.
Let me go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Carl calling from Silver Spring. Oh, Carl, we lost you. Unfortunately, give me a call back. I would like to hear from you. Again, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So one of the things, and I'll start with you, Dr. Lusain, we are just 24 hours barely from where we were last night. And as with all political contests, national political contests, you know, things move from east to west as polls begin to close. Can you kind of summarize what we saw? Because this goes back to the heart of how, for example, Biden supporters had this tension. They were really concerned that Donald Trump was doing quite well in the beginning, and things began to change. What happened last night, from your perspective?
So, as Sonia said, so there's this whole idea that Republicans were going to be leading, particularly in this election, because they were going to come out and vote, and the first votes that were going to be counted were going to be those. And as we move from east to west, we get the numbers in first from the East Coast, of course, because the polls are still open. And although the networks were supposed to kind of hold back, you know, they actually kind of didn't. So when you start looking at those numbers, and the Trump campaign itself was promoting this idea that they were winning, that created the, you know, kind of mass anxiety that went across, you know, Democrats across the country, actually people around the world. And so the reality, though, is that different states report differently and at different times, and you really do have to be patient. And it was pretty clear that there were going to be three or four states that would really kind of change the game. We didn't really kind of know what those were. But by the time you get to the 10 o'clock hour, you can start to have a feel for what those numbers are. And so that's exactly what happened. And then the Trump campaign, one of the arrows in their quiver was, if they weren't going to win it by the numbers, they were going to win it by making these legal arguments. And one of the ways they approached this was to say, if we're winning in the third quarter, the game should be over, when in fact the game is not over. And that's what's going on right now, is that now, in the fourth quarter in Michigan, and in Wisconsin, maybe in Pennsylvania, certainly I think in Arizona, the blue team is winning. And so they really don't, Sonja maybe can speak to this, they really don't have legal cases, so they're going to throw a bunch up against the wall. But for the most part, you can't say stop the count in Michigan because we're losing, but don't stop the count in North Carolina because we think we're winning.
Sonja,
those arguments aren't going to fly.
Sonja, before I have you chime in, the Associated Press is now reporting that President Trump's campaign has indeed filed the lawsuits in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Georgia, laying the groundwork for contesting battleground states as he slipped behind Joe Biden in the hunt for the 270 electoral college votes. It goes on to say the new filings join existing Republican legal challenges in Pennsylvania and Nevada to demand better access for campaign observers to locations where ballots are being processed and counted, as well as absentee ballot concerns. Sonja.
They're petrified. And I think Georgia particularly was an Achilles heel because they expected to have to fight to protect in Pennsylvania and in Michigan the advantages that they had. They did not expect for Georgia to be an exposed rear flank, you see. Mm-hmm. And the desire to route every bit of this over into the courts is always there because there's this sort of bubbling sentiment that they can manipulate the courts, control the courts, or somehow the courts are in their favor. No matter how many times the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court has made clear that the Supreme Court is not a puppet court, and there have been some rulings that went against the president, much to his consternation, you see, they still maintain this abiding belief that somehow they can just put their desires before the Supreme Court and everything will work out all right. They want the vote stopped, the vote count stopped in these places, because it is the urban centers in those states that have the largest number of ballots left to be counted that are blue-leaning and can deliver for Biden. Looking particularly at Georgia again, the roughly 200-some-odd thousand ballots that remain to be counted, three-quarters of them are from somewhere around Fulton County and DeKalb counties. The true irony of which is the bulk of those ballots come from what? The 5th Congressional District, represented by whom? The great and late John Lewis. So you might be hearing a narrative that John Lewis's district served it up and turned Georgia blue. We don't know. So there's a desire to flip, to just cut the count off before it can get to that level. Similar concerns in Pennsylvania, although there also are a large number of uncounted ballots from areas that are staunchly red. And in Michigan, where the volatility is high and now people want to go in and observe the count. So there's a physical fracas going on at the same time that the court battles are playing out. This is our system at work in a way that we've never really seen in modern times. And we did have 2000 and the contested election and hanging chads everywhere. But that was a completely different fight, even as similar as it is to this fight. You know,
you were going to say something.
Undercurrent of we're fighting for the soul and the direction of our republic here.
Dr. Lusain, you were going to make a comment.
Yes. So Sonja's point of this whole idea is that they want to go in and observe. You have a legal right to do that, actually. I've done poll observing or vote counting observing. But
yes,
you don't
yes, they do.
Come in as a mob and, you know, gangbuster your way into it. But this is part of creating this narrative that we are being robbed, we are being cheated, the system is against us, the devil has come out. And so they perform this grievance, but the reality is that they do not have a case in Michigan to argue why they need to stop the vote count. And what this looks like is a prelude to not only intimidation, but something even beyond that.
What do you mean by that?
So Michigan, of course, has been where we've seen the most kind of aggression against the state government, against the governor. And so we remember back during the early parts of the pandemic, back in the other days of the pandemic, where these guys came out, it was actually men and women, who came out who were very armed, and the whole point was to intimidate. And you had legislators in the state government who had to wear bulletproof vests, and they had to have bodyguards. So I think this is part of that energy, because there is simply no rationale to suspect that somehow there's some shenanigans going on around the vote counting, when, again, there are already Republican lawyers and officials who are in the voting site. So it's, you know, there's something else that's going on other than, you know, we are suffering an injustice.
But, you know, to the point about these lawsuits, it's Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Georgia. With the exception of Michigan, you know, Pennsylvania and Georgia right now, even though it's a very thin margin, Trump is winning in Georgia. He's winning in Pennsylvania. Yes, we know that Pennsylvania still has, a million more votes to count, and the president has been very vocal about the, you know, mail-in ballots, because that's what they're, you know, they're talking about in Pennsylvania. And of course, we just spoke about it, Georgia, but it's almost counterintuitive. If you're winning, let the vote go. Michigan, he's losing, so I. Once again, Sonia, I'm carrying the two and dividing by, because it just doesn't make sense.
Well, in Pennsylvania, yes, there's a wider margin between Trump and Biden, but that margin in Georgia, which has been deeply red for a generation, is razor thin, somewhere around 70,000 to 75,000 votes.
It's 1%. Yeah, 1%.
Yep.
Yes, and now they're looking at a situation where an area that has been staunchly Democratic for many, many, many years, heavily Black, and has more than 100,000 ballots to be counted. You do that math, and that's why they're in court now trying to halt the count in Georgia.
Yeah, and you know, we are still... He is still he is of course behind in Nevada, and Nevada says that it will wait until tomorrow morning to update vote count totals. So he's behind there. Arizona expected to post later tonight. Arguably, I would think that, you know, Arizona is baked in for Joe Biden right now, because we are talking about he's leading by 4%. That would be difficult to overcome.
And they filed a suit in Clark County in Nevada because they were trying to, you know, again, see if there could be some way that they could deal with the mail ballots and have them. And the courts basically said, nah, you can't do that. But they're going to probably come back to the well on that one, again, because Nevada, again, can be a determinant state.
Yeah, and of course, the big voting hubs in Nevada, of course, Clark County, where Vegas is,
right,
and then Reno. I mean, it's, and then the rest of the state is just really rural, and you know, so that's
right.
You know, that's where the, you know, that's where the power is. Let's talk about, you know, we know what happened last night, we know where we are. Let's talk about where we are going. If let's do some hypotheticals here. if Biden wins, and he was speaking today in his speech, again, he's talking about being a president for all America. You know, that's the great stump speech. You know, that's the softball. That's the given. But when you look at this map, and I almost want to pull this same map and overlay it over 2008, because it's red in the middle, right, and blue in the west, blue in the east, and a little blue in the upper Midwest. Where are we going, Sonia? Do you see, you know, politically a change moving forward? Or because we also have to think about the Senate, too.
Yes, well,
if Biden wins and the Senate remains in control of the Republicans, for example.
Yes, there will be a lot of what the young people call butt hurt happening in the Senate. If they've managed to hang on to the leadership, they're going to act that out. It'll be interesting to watch Kamala Harris presiding and being the tiebreaker on the initiatives that are necessary to be pushed through that body. You have what could possibly happen, and then you have what needs to happen. Among the things that need to happen is a true discussion of the damage that's been done to America's voting apparatus by the dismantling of the Voting Rights Act and Section 5. I think there has been too little credit extended to Stacey Abrams for standing in the breach on that very important subject and using her ingenuity to flip the approach to mobilizing voters, which has been a hedge in this election. And so those type of reforms need to be openly discussed, passed, and implemented. And that struggle may be difficult to pull off in an immediate way when the country is in such disarray from the economy is in disarray from the pandemic. Getting this nation past the pandemic has to happen. You know, some serious management of public health has to happen. So all of the things that could be remedies for fixing the damage that was wrought in recent years might have to wait. And I don't know what type of patience the American public that is Biden leaning and Biden friendly will have for that. That the notion, as you say, of the president being the president of all the people, that may not be satisfactory to these folks who felt oppressed over the past 4 years by a president who had no regard for large segments of the people governed by him. So there will probably be an appetite for some revenge, and we shouldn't give the respect that we were denied. And that has to be managed. So it's a tall order, and how successful they can be with that, we'll just have to wait and see.
Dr. Lussain, same thing if Biden wins, but of course the Senate remains in control of the Republicans. Are we talking about gridlock? Is there anything that can get done? And what about the just where the country is culturally?
Yeah, so not only will Republicans control the Senate, they've stacked the courts. So mm-hmm. Biden is coming into a very different situation than, say, Obama in 2008. Now, when Obama came in, you know, he was given an economy that was in the blender. You know, it was just completely, like, falling apart. But Obama, at least for the first 2 years, had control of the Congress. The Democrats controlled the House and controlled the Senate, and they were able to get through not only the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, but also, you know, critical legislation to save the economy. Biden is not only not going to have that luxury, but as Sonia says, he's got a pandemic to deal with. And he's coming in the middle of January, where we could be raging an unbelievable kind of horror. And I would bet, I might be out on a limb, between now and January, Donald Trump is not going to do jack to actually try to address this. And in fact, you know, I'm betting, you know, I have online betting with my friend about what day of this week Fauci is going to be fired. Because Donald Trump is going to enact revenge across the federal government, and he hasn't governed for 4 years. Why would he govern in the last couple of months? So Biden is going to have some serious challenge now. What may mitigate some of this is that without the Trump aura there, there may be some Republicans. You think of Mitt Romney, there may be one or two others who on certain legislation would be willing to reach across the aisle. But that's going to still be difficult. And the question, one question is, does Trump's base still act without Trump being around? And will Trump go off to Moscow, never to be heard from again, or will Trump try to take this movement under him and do something with it? You know, these are some unknown questions, and you know, Biden, Harris are going to be dealing with those from day one.
I believe that you know the latter is probably very true. Just certainly just you know a feeling that if Biden wins, even if the president leaves without disputing, you know, the finally the election, or you know, as we say, a peaceful transition of power, I suspect that his Twitter account will be louder than ever, and that his and the people who support him, given carte blanche to really be vocal during the past 4 years, they're not going to go quietly into that good night. That's what I believe. So anyway, I want to thank both of you, Sonia Ross and Dr. Clarence Lussain, for speaking with us. And remember, it's not over until it's over, and there is certainly more to come. So thank you both for talking with us.
Sure enough.
Thank you.
That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, November 4th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM.